Hello, my lovely podcast friend. How are you doing? How's your life going on? How is your week heading up? We are getting there. We are slowly moving on towards a better moment in a better world, and we are having the profitable moments. Just a quick reminder with the intro, we have the Brexit report out. So get yourself a discount, get yourself on the profits, and get yourself your hands on the Brexit. And it's just so simply visit hofprofit.com/Brexit. Have a look at it. Just think on what's happening because it's unique. A big member state, a big member permanent state seat in the United Nations, a complete package. They leave the European Union. So I strongly suggest that you have a look, check it out, because it's going to be lovely. At least for investors. But you have to be smart, and the big question you have to ask yourself, do you want to be on the journey towards success, or do you want to remain on the journey toward food aid and aid from people? It's just what you want. It's up to you, definitely, but it's just, I would say, go for it. And for the coming two shows, we're going to do something slightly different, because it's sadly enough this week that we 16 years ago, where goes the time, that 9/11 was under attack. So I thought in this moment that we got big geopolitical issues, problems on every side, I would simply say we are having to step up and make a small step towards change. Make a small step and analyze and see where the problems come from. Because you can say Trump is good, Trump is bad. I mean, it will be no secret for you, I am on Camp Trump. But it's time that we have a look on what's happening and how we can move things on. And if you look at, for example, North Korea, which I have a great guest on later in the show, it's just, there is a different route to it. And I would simply say we have to look at it. And don't forget, there is a war going on. North Korea, South Korea are in war. 150,000 more grenades are ready to hit Seoul. Although my guest is not really sure about it, I'm sure that the last bomb was a hydrogen bomb. So, although not a pure... And the interesting part from it is, in my opinion, at least that what the North Koreans got, I assume the Iranians also got. So that's one other thing. And the second thing that I'm going for and looking at is have a look on where does it go? Because this comes from somewhere. The North Korean government is pursuing a nuclear bomb, and they are having one. They have a hydrogen bomb. Their rockets getting better, and ultimately the world will fall into Chinese dominance. I mean, and that's just a matter of fact. Just look at the numbers. There are over a billion people, and the Chinese state is clear on its goals, and I am simply looking on how to benefit from it. But sometimes you need to look a step back. You need to make a movement this way. You just have to look, think, and see what's happening. I mean, why are things happening? Maybe some things are not really as actionable, but that's okay. Because if you understand the story behind it, you can act on it. And not everything is the great, glorious, happy, fun thing. The matter of fact is that we live in a scary world. I mean, Pakistan lost atomic bombs with a big flood. North Korea has atomic bombs. The US has atomic bombs. China has them. Russia has them. Russia lost some atomic bombs. Uzbekistan, Tajikistan, Kazakhstan all have nuclear weapons on their soil. They're all former Soviet Union, but it's happening. Then we got Ukraine in Europe gonna get a big war. You have the NATO allies. You have China and India with North Korea rallied with Russia. It's bloody scary in my opinion. It's just... We need to take a step back, we need to have a look, we need to think what's happening, and we need to see how to move the ball forward. What we need to do is see what's happening, why are things happening, and how can we get it out, and how can we benefit from it. Having that said, I sincerely hope you enjoy the show, you enjoy the interview. Please follow the podcast and share the episodes. And the reason I say so is that I want my listeners base to grow, and it's time to get some growth in. But it is not, look, I mean, this morning North Korea launched their rocket. It's a proof they are doing something. And they are talking about sanctions from the United Nations. But what people forget is that embargoes and sanctions from the UN work only in 30% of the cases. So it is pretty a very ineffective thing. 70% of the cases, it's not working. And it was Putin, and I think he is right that the North Korean they will go and to eat grass rather than giving up their nuclear program. And if you look at what's happening in the world, I don't agree with it, but I can understand it. I mean, why not simply put down the weapons? Simply say, we are not killing each other, we are not doing a war, we are going to talk peace. I mean, the West is over, in my opinion, so why bother with it anymore? Why mock on the West? And you can say that, well, the West, we have freedom, we have democracy. Well, and how far you got the democracy, and how far can you say what you want? You got that guy, that rotten, that hedge fund, I believe it's from a hedge fund. I'm so sorry. We got a hedge fund guy, and he basically said that for $5,000, if you give an hair lock off Hillary Clinton. Well, George said that's a threat to her life, and I'm just wondering if you're not allowed to say it, then you have no freedom of speech, because ultimate freedom of speech is ultimate. So, having that said, and what you need to realize and think about also is I am just thinking, and I'm just thinking the world is a really dangerous place. The world is full with violence, with criminals, with government bureaucrats. And for me, they are all the same. It's just have a look on what's happening. Just look at the news. It's war. War. Killing of babies. Beautiful people die. That's basically the news. I mean, if I look in the Netherlands, the police, then we also got from the police a lot of corruptions. People who speak out for the police seems to be corrupt on other people's payroll. Criminals are working on. And I'm just thinking, is it not a better move? Just a quick move. To just stop it. Just kick them out. Just go for it. I mean, this sounds so insane, it just sounds so stupid. But in a week that thousands of people died, it is time to think a bit about it. And what you need to think about is we are heading towards the Third World War. I mean, there is too many danger, too many things are going wrong, and it's time that we speak out, and we speak out for peace. And having that said, then I would say I was honored to get Scott Horton on the show. Scott is really knowledgeable. He is a fellow libertarian, so we have something in common, and that always creates a nice thing. And what the interesting part is, he is not the true blue extreme specialist on it, but he knows a lot about a lot of things. He knows a lot about foreign affairs, and that's just lovely. And I'm just thinking, why not? I mean, why can we not get those balls out? Having it said, I just hope you enjoyed. We start talking about North Korea and we end up American politics, so, and we have everything in between. And then just listen to it. It's gonna be fun, it's gonna be joyful, and let me know what you think about it. Feel friendly to introduce yourself.
So I'm the author of a new book called Fool's Errand: Time to End the War in Afghanistan, which you can find out all about at foolserrand.us.
Okay.
And then I host Anti-War Radio and the Scott Horton Show, basically anti-war interviews, and that's all at scotthorton.org. And I'm on KPFK in Los Angeles on Sunday mornings. And I'm the opinion editor of antiwar.com. And I am the managing director of the Libertarian Institute with Sheldon Richman.
Okay, so basically you are the guy to talk about war and peace.
I'll try.
Okay,
Oh, I
cool.
should have said libertarianinstitute.org for that.
Libertarian Institute, always great to have a fellow libertarian and a fellow mindset on the show. Having that said, North Korea is launching rocket after rocket and bomb after bomb. The last bomb that I checked, do you think it's an atomic or a hydrogen bomb?
Well, I really don't know. I mean, I don't think anybody really knows, but they say it was big enough that it could have been a small H bomb. There's a kind of a gray area there between a pure atom bomb and an H bomb, which is called boosted, and I guess once A-bomb is boosted to a certain amount, then at some point it becomes a legit H-bomb. I'm not exactly certain where that line is, but you can have an A-bomb that's boosted with some fusion and some hydrogen isotopes fusing to give it more of a bang, but they would still call it less than a true H-bomb. But in any case, I mean, they do have them. So, some kind of atomic weapons, enough to kill a city with anyway. It only takes an A-bomb to kill a city.
Okay, so, and now North Korea are also testing the rockets. Where do you think that's going to end up with their program? Are they banging down for the sanctions from the rest of the world, or are they keeping it on?
Well, I mean, I think they're saber-rattling because they're afraid of getting regime changed, and they have good reason to be. The Americans keep threatening them. You know, never even mind Donald Trump. He's such a poster child for, you know, being bombastic and threatening and the fires the likes of which the world has never seen. But in fact, Barack Obama said the same kind of thing all the time, that, of course, the North Koreans know that we could completely annihilate them and this kind of talk. All the time, Barack Obama and Donald Trump both, I'm not so sure if Bush did this, I guess he probably did, they fly B-1 bombers over North Korea, which, you know, those are H-bomb delivery devices. This means each time they don't really know whether this is it or not, you know? This is extremely provocative stuff, but of course, it's sort of like with the Israelis and the Palestinians. Whenever the Israelis kill anybody, they always call it retaliation for Palestinian aggression. And it's the same kind of thing here, where the Americans, well, of course we have the right to fly our B-1 H-bomb delivery devices wherever we want and threaten whoever we want and do whatever we want and maintain dominance wherever we want. And how dare anyone insist that they have the right to maintain independence from us? That's a threat. How dare you threaten to defend yourself from us? And that's the frame of all of this. And, you know, I'm from here and everything, but it's true. That's how it works.
Okay, so, and definitely, they do not have the right from an international law perspective to fly their bomb delivery machines over North Korean airspace and ground.
Yeah, and you know what? Yeah. They may stay, like, right on the border, technically, on the 38th parallel, but the intention is pretty clear. It's a threat. They run these massive drills, and, of course, they have the U.S. Navy, and, you know, I gotta admit, actually, off the top of my head, I'm not certain all of a sudden whether they have officially deployed nuclear weapons back to the Korean Peninsula. I know that George H.W. Bush, back after the end of the Cold War, removed them all, and including from Navy ships offshore from that theater. Although I forget now whether they've been officially reintroduced or not, but certainly those B-1s, that's what they are designed for, is nuclear war, and the North Koreans know that. And, you know, your audience may be aware of this. I don't really know. I know that most Americans are not, because I know that I was not for a very, very long time aware of the degree of destruction that the United States visited upon North Korea in the Korean War in the early 1950s. They dropped more bombs than they did on Japan. It was absolute total napalm destruction, as bad as they did with the firebombing of Tokyo and with the nuclear weapons there. And they killed a third of the population almost.
That's a lot. I mean, one of the three people killed by bombs, that's just a hell of a lot, at least in my opinion.
Yeah, it's a Holocaust is what it is. It's a genocide. It's absolute, you know, it's it's war criminality of the absolute highest order. And they remember that. We don't remember that. In America, I don't know about where you live, but in America, when we think of the Korean War, we think of the TV show MASH with Hot Lips Houlihan and Hawkeye Pierce and Trapper John and Radar O'Reilly. And isn't Radar cute? You just want to pinch his cheeks and whatever. And the people dying, I mean, that's just a sideshow. It has nothing to do with it. Nobody even knows. Mm-hmm. We've never even heard of it.
So, and when do you think that is going to end? I mean, officially, there's North Korea and South Korea are still in war, but when is it going to end?
You know, I really don't know. I mean, to me, I don't have anything optimistic to say. You know, I don't want to, like, predict the worst and be alarmist either. I mean, I really think that the status quo is going to hold. Except the problem with the status quo is the status quo does include, as you say, their missiles getting better and better and better. So then the Americans keep drawing these red lines and moving the goalposts. They have to keep moving the goalposts because, as Stephen Bannon said, there is no credible military option here. I mean, even if America hit North Korea with everything they got to start the war off in the world's most spectacular and most successfully planned shock and awe campaign to take out all their artillery and all of their rockets and all everything. They still have a million man army, and they still would have so many surviving cannon to level Seoul with and retaliate with. They're just, there's, you know, the Pentagon, they've played this war game over and over again. The capital city of South Korea is right there next to the border, you know, within range. And it's a huge civilian population, you know, absolutely subject to retaliation. And not to mention all the American soldiers and their families that are there too. So, you know, in other words, to me, the real question is the discrepancy between what's going on and what could be done instead. When in fact, America could really end this. And it sounds like utopian or hippie or whatever, but it's actually not. It's completely conservative and reasonable for America to say, you know what, we want to end this war. We want to open up official peace talks. Right now, we only have a ceasefire from the end of the war in 1953. We have a ceasefire. We need an official peace treaty and an end of the war. We will be happy to lift all our sanctions and give you a security guarantee. That means a promise not to attack. As long as you, I don't know, what, at least cease the atomic weapons program and maybe give it up. And, you know, here's something, too. And I see this all day with the echo chamber media where people say, we're going to have to attack North Korea. We have no choice. They're driving us to it. What are we going to do? And all of this. And yet they completely ignore, in fact, they're probably almost entirely ignorant of the fact that the North Koreans have said, we will negotiate even our possession of nuclear weapons. We will negotiate our continuing weapons program to start. As long as you guys be willing to call off your annual exercises that are basically preparations for invasion. And as long as you guys will, in other words, and you can read all about this at The Intercept, Jonathan Schwartz has written a couple of great articles, that their demands are perfectly reasonable, right? They're not saying give us a bunch of welfare, you know, do anything. They're basically saying, listen, if you guys will back off, we will back off. And TV goes, oh, they're crazy, they're crazy. No, they're not. Why would they be crazy? They're military men and, you know, a 35-year-old, you know, dictator guy, but who says he has mental problems, right? That's just a lie. That's what it is it should be to everyone's ears, an absolute blatant lie. It's a shoddy excuse for we refuse to negotiate with him because we accuse him of being too irrational to negotiate with. But that should be revealing as to who's the real guilty party here. One is the dictator of one of the poorest countries in the world. The other are the lying, H-bomb possessing by the thousands world empire that always gets their way or else.
Okay, so basically you say that there is a solution possible, but then the US should simply say peace talks and get a solution and get peace.
That's right. Yep, let's open up trade. Let's be friends. We'll send our orchestra. You send yours. We'll send our basketball teams. You guys clap. It'll be badass. Everybody will love it.
It sounds just
I mean, that's how we defeated communism in China. I mean, China is still ruled by the Communist Party Politburo, but they haven't seen communism since 1975. And that's because, you know, basically America said, hey, you know what would be better than all y'all starving to death? What if we opened up trade? And then Deng Xiaoping said, to get rich is glorious. And blam. Now, it is a fascist country. It's not a free country. I'm not saying it's a free country. But it's a prosperous country compared to what it was when Mao Zedong had reduced them to basically caveman level, you know, stone or bronze age subsistence, starving to death by the tens of millions under real communism. So, you know, if you want to help the people of Korea, it's the same thing with any time you hear the American government talk about how much they care for the local population of the country they want to attack, how they care more for those people than the local dictatorship does. Well, we already see how to undo it, right? You get more flies with honey. You just go over there. And what do the North Koreans have to lose if we say, let's be friends? You know, the Americans, the other side of that argument is, nuh-uh, because the North Korean government is going to collapse any minute now as long as we keep the pressure on. But you know what? They've been saying that since the day the Soviet Union fell. Christmas 1991. Like that afternoon, the Americans said, ooh, North Korea is going to fall any day now.
Yeah.
That was 26 years ago. So we're going to have to figure out something else. Like, how about we just drop all our threats and try to be friends? But I got another counterpoint to that, which is it's in the LA Times, where I couldn't believe they wrote this. Really, it's pretty revealing, not just what they wrote, but that they decided to publish this in the Los Angeles Times, as though this isn't shameful, this isn't a secret, this isn't the dark kind of shadow choices being made. This is the reality right here in broad daylight. Check it out. Here's the problem, they said. We could make peace, but then we wouldn't have the threat of North Korea to hold over the head of South Korea and Japan. And if we can't threaten South Korea and Japan that they would be in danger from North Korea without our protection, well, then they might spin off and declare independence from the American Empire. And God help us, they might even fall under the sway of Chinese dominance instead of American. And so we must, like Monty Python, we must fight to keep Japan American. And we keep Japan American by keeping them threatened by North Korea. Which reminds me of a topic, a Newsweek article for Reed Zachariah, the current CNN host, that he wrote back in 1997, I was. And he said, Saddam Hussein, he said, if Saddam Hussein did not exist, we would have to invent him. He is the linchpin of our foreign policy in the Middle East. In other words, hey, Saudi, if it wasn't for us, Saddam would get you. Hey, Jordan, if it wasn't for us, Saddam would get you. Hey, Israel, if it wasn't for us, Saddam would get you. Whatever. And so it's really the same. It's the same game that they play with the Russians, right? Hey, all of Eastern Europe, if it wasn't for us, Putin would get you. And they got to manufacture these enemies, you know, partially just to keep their allies in line.
So basically you say that peace is possible, and like if peace would happen, then it's very likely that Japan and South Korea would go more into the Chinese influence, which ultimately will happen because they are pretty close by, and with over a billion customers, you have something.
I mean, I'm not really making my pronouncement about the future there, but I'm saying that's what these policymakers say is their worry, that if we don't have North Korea to threaten South Korea and Japan with, that they will declare independence from us and go their own way and more toward China. I mean, I don't care either way. I mean, the hell do I care if Japan is friends with China?
But what would the United States have to lose if Japan and South Korea become friends with China, which makes sense?
Well, that's a good question, right?
Yeah.
That's the question. The American people have nothing to lose, but the U.S. government loses power and influence. Our politicians have very different interests than the national interest. In fact, the more wealth in the world there is, if China, Korea, and Japan all get together and do a lot of business, that's just more wealth to be traded with the Americans and the Western Europeans and the Africans and South Americans too. That's fine. We don't lose when they gain. You'd have to be stupid Donald Trump to think that, you know? But so that's a problem, because he's actually the one sitting in the chair right now.
I always keep surprised at what people say, that at the beginning of the Trump campaign, no one said that he would have a chance, and ultimately, he is sitting there. No matter what you think about it, he is sitting there. Which is
interesting. I'm with you.
It's interesting to see that no one took notice on third parties and those things. I mean, here in the Netherlands, we had in the media where the Dutch Public Broadcasting Organization with the mainstream news said that Ted Cruz was a moderate and average Republican. Can you believe this for more than a second? Ted Cruz average, I mean, come on.
I couldn't quite get you there. What?
Oh, sorry.
They said that what?
In the Netherlands, we had at the around the Trump election that Senator Ted Cruz from Texas, where you're from,
Senator Cruz. Yes. I'm sorry, I misunderstood you there.
He was a moderate and an average and an accepted by the general public Republican, an average Republican.
Right.
But I would say, yeah, right. Read his statements.
Right. No, I'm with you. I mean, what happened there was, I had said for years, it's going to be Jeb. It's going to be Jeb. It's going to be Jeb, because who could stop him? There's nobody else in the Republican field that can touch him. And then when Donald Trump got in there, I was like, well, I don't know. I mean, the guy's such a boob. He'll probably end up screwing it up. Mm-hmm. But then Jeb was, first of all, just absolutely horrible. Right. And I mean, he had no redeeming qualities at all. He's just stuttering and making excuses all the time and failing all the time, trying to figure out what he's supposed to say all the time. And then Trump called him low energy. And then what happened with me was I saw the Dilbert cartoonist Scott Adams on CNN, and he said, "You people see a clown, but I see a master communicator." But and I'm not so sure Trump's a master communicator, but I would say that the thing that really impressed me that Scott Adams said was about the linguistic kill shot, that an insult from Trump is not just an insult. It's a linguistic kill shot, which means that when Trump called Jeb low energy, it was a very unique insult. Nobody has ever been called that by anybody before, right? That's not from a movie. That's not... That never happened before. Low energy. What a weird thing to call somebody, right? And yet, it just fits Jeb so perfect. And even if Jeb tries to step it up, then that just reminds you how low energy he really is now that he's trying so hard to not sound so low energy. And it just stuck to him like a tattoo on his face. There's nothing he could do about it. And of course, low energy also is like a synonym for impotence, right? I mean, Trump was basically saying, this guy can't even pleasure his wife. He's supposed to be the leader of the nation. And once Trump was willing to go that far, then that was it. I mean, there was no way that Jeb could come back after that. And then it's just like you're saying about Ted Cruz. You go down the list. Who do you got? You got Rand, Ted Cruz, Marco Rubio. I mean, all of these guys are half of Jeb Bush. And Jeb Bush just got crushed. So at that point, it was clear. I mean, that was 2 years ago. You know, this time, 2015. It was clear Jeb is toast and there's nobody else on the list. It's going to be him. And then Hillary, of course, is doomed to lose. She would have lost even to Jeb. And she's absolutely horrible. And in fact, I even knew that way back in 2014 when her second book came out from her time as Secretary of State. Mm-hmm. And she announced a big book tour and they canceled it after the first appearance because only like 10 people showed up. And it was supposed to be this huge thing with velvet rope lines and all of this stuff. And nobody showed. They had an entire, like, you know, 20-state book tour planned. It was supposed to be this big deal. And they canceled the whole thing because there was just no interest in it whatsoever. She'd already lost. She'd already got the consolation prize as Secretary of State. She should have retired right then. It was clear that people had no interest in her as their leader whatsoever at that point. And that was, you know, a year and a half, 2 years before she even started running. So by this time, 2 years ago, I knew it was going to be Trump. It was that easy to tell.
And
Marco Rubio? Can you imagine the American people voting for Marco Rubio? Come on.
Well, let's be clear. I am not an American passport holder, so thank God I don't have to make that choice. But I was surprised that just the media was saying that Ted Cruz was moderate than average, because I don't think he's moderate or Everest, and if he would say the things he said during his campaign and during just his political career in the Netherlands, he would be basically locked up as a lunatic.
Yeah, well, I mean, by moderate, they mean conservative as opposed to completely radical and bombastic like Trump. But it's not quite really a left-right distinction as much as a attitude. I mean, Cruz usually doesn't yell loud. He just says insane things quietly. You know what I mean? So they're like, yeah. Oh, how moderate.
Well,
you know, he says, all we got to do is just round up all the gays and give them the electroshock therapy or what. And everybody's like, oh, okay, that sounds reasonable the way you put it.
Okay.
Like when Bill Kristol proposes a war. I mean, hey, look, what are you going to do? We got to attack.
Okay, one final question and I'll let you go, at least on this side. Rand Paul also lost from Trump, and it's way off topic, I know, but why did he lose?
Why did who lose?
Rand Paul.
Oh, well, look, I mean, he was destined to lose anyway, but what he did was he lost like a loser instead of losing like a heroic world champion like his father did. And the reason why is because he completely sold out. And from the moment he won, I mean, go back to his Senate race. He won the Senate race because he was Ron Paul's son and because he was the Tea Party guy. And what did the Tea Party mean? That meant Republican voters who are sick and tired of the Republican Party, and they want to put their own choice of guys in there in the Republican seats because they're sick and tired of what the Republican Party is shoveling down their throat. That's exactly what the Tea Party was. And they're the ones who put him in there. And then from the moment he joined the Senate, he started running to go and hide behind Mitch McConnell's skirt and become as mainstream as he possibly could. And he wore his ambition absolutely on his sleeve. He's a brand new freshman senator. And he turns around, he endorses Mitt Romney for president when his father was still technically in the running at the convention. And he did so. And, you know, they even showed Carol Paul say, yeah, he gave us 30 minutes notice. Right. In other words, he didn't discuss this with Ron. He let them know he was going to do it, though. That's nice. And then he went ahead and did this. And why did he do it? Because somebody had told him, and he was dumb enough to believe that Mitt Romney was going to name him to be the vice presidential candidate, which, first of all, that obviously is going to be Paul Ryan's spot. Why in the world would Mitt Romney think he needed Rand? It's not like he and Rand were already friends or something like that. Why would Rand think that Romney would think that he would need him? He wouldn't. If he needs a fiscal conservative or whatever, go ahead and go with Paul Ryan. And then, by the way, and Rand was like, oh, I would be honored to be named the vice presidential candidate. But meanwhile, Romney is going to lose anyway. Why would he be honored for the vice presidential spot on a guaranteed to lose ticket against incumbent Obama in 2012? It's completely stupid. But it just goes to reveal the way he thinks about all these things. You know, when he first started running for president, the first thing he did was go to all of the most major Republican Party donors begging for money. And they were all, meh, you know, I don't know. You seem, you know, controllable enough, I guess, but I don't see why to think you're going to win. So, no. And they all turned him down. He went to Sheldon Adelson, who is basically an Israel first, in his own words, cares only about Israel. It's his only issue. And it was coincidentally a week later or something that Rand came out and said America should guarantee the borders of a new sovereign and independent Kurdistan, which would just mean war with Iran, Iraq, Turkey, Syria, maybe Azerbaijan and Armenia. I mean, what in the world was he even talking about other than Sheldon Adelson told him to say that? And he's like a little dancing monkey or a dog or something begging for a biscuit. And meanwhile, where was the Ron Paul revolution? Ron Paul went on TV and said, true thing, second true thing, debunking of a false thing. And people absolutely rallied to him by the millions. I mean, he was just a little old House member that no one had ever heard of before. I mean, the hardcore libertarian movement all loved him. But most of America never heard of him. And he went from 0 to 900 miles an hour. Just by being Ron, just by being for peace and being and telling the truth and saying and really telling people you don't have to be Michael Moore, the big fat communist glutton hypocrite, you know, idiot to be anti-war. You could be a Republican Texan square like me and be as anti-war as could be, far more anti-war than Michael Moore, in fact. And people were like, oh, phew, thank goodness. He's an Air Force veteran, a doctor in the Air Force. He was the perfect guy for that message, and he brought libertarianism forward 1,000 miles, you know? I don't know, whatever your metaphor is. And then what did Rand do? He squandered all of it. Mm-hmm. And then, see, it's your fault for asking me this. I'm going to keep talking.
Oh, keep going.
Think back to the campaign and the debates. It was in the second debate. They said, do you promise that no matter who's the nominee, that you will support him? And I think all of them raised their hand except Trump. And what Trump was doing was picking a fight with Jeb, I think, and was saying he wouldn't support Jeb. He didn't think he had any other serious competition. He didn't. So that was really what it was. But Rand interrupted and says to the debate host, teacher, I'm telling, look at him. He didn't even raise his hand. He hasn't sworn fealty to the central leadership of the Republican Party. And the whole crowd and everybody was just like, Rand. And, you know, in fact, remember, you may have seen there's a show on the Comedy Channel, Comedy Central, called The Larry Williamson Show or something. Larry, something. I'm sorry, I forget the black guy. I kind of like the guy. Wilkinson or something like that.
Yeah,
anyway.
Okay. Yeah, well.
So anyway, but the point is he had a guest, and the guest was not familiar, right? This was not like she had a grudge. She was just a comedian. And she goes, who is that up there? Was it Ron Paul? And they go, no, Rand, his son. So she didn't even know which was which or whatever. That was, you know, she was just kind of coming from a very everyman point of view. And she goes, what was his deal? He was just like a tattletale up there. He looked like the teacher's pet. He was being a tattletale, telling on Donald Trump for something. What was it again? She didn't even remember what they were fighting about. All she remembered about Rand Paul was he was a tattletale, for God's sake. And then meanwhile, so what's the opposite of that? Here's what Rand could have said. Hey, guess what? Jeb Bush is the enemy of mankind. And this is really a two-man race, and everybody knows it. It's me versus Donald Trump, because nobody supports Jeb Bush. He ought to go home right now. He's the brother of George Bush. The guy who ruined everything, the guy who gave us Barack Obama, the guy who's the worst in the world. You can't live that down. You try to hide your last name with your crappy one-word slogan. Beat it, Jeb. Go home now. And the rest of you, it's the anti-establishment candidate's year. And I may be a senator, but I'm the son of a Paul. And he may be a businessman and not a senator or a governor, but he's a billionaire from New York. So I'm more outsider than him, and watch me. I'm going to abolish the central bank and bring all the troops home for real. Now, that's an outsider. And then you would have had, instead of Ted Cruz, it would have been Rand versus Trump for the duration. And then Trump would have beat him anyway because he's Rand, for crying out loud. But at least and Trump is Trump, for crying out loud. But at least he would have been doing the right thing, and at least he would have had his head on straight about what race he was even in. Is he really thought that this was the year of the guy who can be the most like Jeb Bush to win the nomination? I mean, if that was true, wouldn't people just vote for Jeb? So in other words, you can tell the reason I'm so angry is because I don't understand why Rand doesn't get it. He's the son of Ron Paul. And, you know, actually, I do understand why. It's because for years he saw Ron toil away in obscurity. And he thought, Dad, you're just too pure and too good on everything. You need to be a bit more conservative and a little bit palatable to Republicans, and you can do more good. And Ron always said, no, 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 man, I'm sticking to it. Gold standard and peace, no matter what, all the time, etc. But it turned out that even though Rand seemed like he probably was right for 30 years, it turned out he was wrong. It turned out that all Ron needed was an opportunity to smash Rudy Giuliani on the ground and blame 9/11 on Bill Clinton killing his dad. And once he did that, blam, he was a global superstar. He spread Ludwig von Mises to the steppes of Central Asia with just a recommendation. He changed the world forever. All he needed was a camera on. And in fact, Little Wolf Glitzer was like, I like this Ron Paul guy. Let's have him on every day. Why not? He has an answer for everything, and he's really nice, and he's always available. And so all of a sudden, Ron was just
everywhere.
Just a huge thing. And so Rand, it totally makes sense why Rand thought that his father should always been more moderate, more conservative, more get along, go along, get further. But he should have learned the lesson of 2007 that actually, apparently, no. There really is a market for this kind of radicalism. There is a market for real, you know, a real end to cronyism and a real free market where even the big guys are free to fail, right? And there is a constituency for people who are not Michael Moore, big fat millionaire communist hypocrites who want to bring all the troops home. And he missed the boat so bad it's like biblical. I mean, if you think about the win that he stole from Ron Paul's sales to then just go and wreck the ship into the rocks like this, it's just a catastrophe. I mean, I could not possibly find the words in English to express how disappointed I am.
Okay. And then we leave it for here.
Oh well, what do you say about that one? I mean, what do you think about all the things that Scott said? I mean, he is very knowledgeable and basically he blames George W. Bush for getting us Obama, gives us great political insights on the way it goes in the United States. So it's really interesting to see, and I was really happy to have him on because we got all that great insight, ideas and things happening. It's just so lovely. But let me know what you think about it. You can send me a tweet. You can tweet me at Lodewijkhoff. You can leave a comment below. And that's it for today. And the next show is gonna be about Afghanistan. Always fun. Same thing. It's just me to think about what's happening. And that's why I got it on. And before I let you go, because definitely I'm taking quite some time with you, I will let you go, but with some comment. I'm going to interview John Rubio. He is from dollarcollapse.com. And I would simply say that if you are interested, let me know what your question is, because the show is for you. We're going to do some interviews, we're going to do some questions, and it's going to be great, fun, and joyful. So simply leave me a message and get the ball and let the moments of fun out. I talk to you later and talk to you next time. Cheers.